Okay, good afternoon and half a day. Thank you for waiting till the bitter end. My name is Anne Marie Gumatautau. I was born in Guam, where the America's Day begins, and raised in Hawaii and also in California. Just recently moved from San Diego to Seoul, Korea, so if I have moments of zoning out, please forgive me with the time change. Anyway, I'm very excited to talk to you about this model program that we just started very recently. The official name, of course, is the California Chamorro Breast Cancer Survivors Alliance, otherwise known as the Alliance. And I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues that have been part of this, specifically Lou, who's here live and in person. And of course, our fearless CEO of Guam Communications Network, Lola Savant Santos. Okay, I don't have any relationships to disclose. And before I get into the history of the Alliance, I just wanted to mention, sort of at this point in a presentation, you talk about the background and the impetus for starting a program. And really, the tragedy of it is that there has been very little research done on Pacific Islanders, specifically Chamorro women, and looking at breast cancer prevalence and morbidity, mortality, all of those incidences, the research just isn't there. There has been some, but not enough to have conclusive evidence on some of the programs and some of the steps to take forward. So this was really a catalyst for starting this program. GCN started the Alliance by facilitating support groups, getting the Chamorros together from different parts of the Southern California region and talking about what need is there, what can we do to promote breast cancer health, awareness, education, etc. So GCN met with some survivors that were known in the community and started talking about ways that we can extend outreach to the San Diego community. Of course, all of this had to have some funding, and we were very fortunate to have WinCART, Weaving an Islander Network for Cancer Awareness Research and Training, to be part of that seed funding. And about, 2003, the Alliance began its first steps and was formulated through the expansion of the existing Cancer Survivors Network that GCN also founded. So with that, the Alliance began with a core group of breast cancer survivors that are now continuing their work and outreach. They meet regularly to share their experiences and not only to talk about what they've experienced with their patient-doctor communication, but also to talk about how they can get others to go get their mammograms. We've had patient navigation through the training of Lou and also Nellie Scambaluri to teach them on how we can educate women about, you know, the importance of breast cancer screening, and again with the funding from WinCART to do so. The partnership with WinCART and GCN gave us a really formal structure to be able to carry through those steps. Obviously, developing a scope of work, objectives, a budget, just a nice organized platform for how to move forward. Research support, we're sort of in those throes right now and how we can, you know, evaluate the measures that we've taken and monitor what's been done and what needs to be done. Capacity building opportunities, which is really, really key. How to embrace the Chamorro community in the Southern California region as well as beyond. Mentorships. We have been fortunate to have work with Cal State Fullerton and some of the other institutions in the area to help mentor us, to help grow the program, develop our objectives and our goals. And then, of course, our thing that we call merendas. For anybody that doesn't know what a merenda is, it's basically a gathering of folks and coming together to talk story and to eat, which is a big priority, as all of us know, with Pacific Islanders. So with that, we've gone ahead and done our outreach activities through kind of piggybacking with other projects that were going on, the Breast Cancer Research Program and the PATH, the Promoting Access to Healthcare for Pacific Islander Women and Southeast Asian Women. And this is our initial group of breast cancer survivors that I was talking about. Of course, the important element of food involved there. In San Diego, we've had various outreach workshops that we've held, of course, funded by WinCART and with other partners, Susan Coleman and GCN. And here's a typical table that we have at our outreach events with all of the brochures provided by Susan Coleman, the American Cancer Society, our breast model and all the information that women can just come over and take at their pleasure. This is our breast cancer survivor, Lucy Isaacson, and I just wanted to point out, if you see that picture of her in the front, she was chosen to be part of the Lance Armstrong brochure. So it was nice to get that visibility. And this was a forum that was held in Guam about 3 years ago. And as you can see, it was pretty well attended. And it was the first event on Guam that was dedicated to breast cancer awareness and training. And so the survivors there, as you can see in the front, shared their stories and their experiences. They were interviewed by the media. And all of these people came on board to support this forum, including, not on here, the Guam Hilton, the Continental Airlines, and other sponsors that were really excited about the program being brought to Guam. In San Diego, they continue to do small group workshops with the local Chamorro women, and they found, actually, that this has been the most effective gathering of education because, you know, in the living room of somebody's auntie or cousin, they're able to express their fears or their reasons for not going to a mammogram, and those that are breast cancer survivors are able to kind of privately disclose their experiences without being in a big forum, even like this, which can be intimidating. The merendas have been held at the Guam Club on various occasions, and they've been quite successful. One of the ones that they had about 50 people, the initial attendance, and from that, they are going on and producing workshops on different topics, kind of a spin-off from there. And again, funding provided by all of these great partners that we're proud to be associated with. And here's an example of the Chamorro Merenda, which everyone looks forward to, doing what we do best. And interestingly enough, at these workshops, we obviously are talking about breast cancer awareness and training, but what was really interesting that we did not expect is that people in the audience, both females and males, really expressed a desire to learn more about other health topics. Other health topics that are quite prevalent in the Chamorro community, including diabetes and gout and heart disease. I mean, they were really excited that we were doing this for them in terms of breast cancer, but they were saying, well, can you talk about, you know, diabetes management? Can you come back and talk to us about this and about that? So fortunately, this funding that we have now is supporting that interest. So what have we accomplished? Number one, and we're still working on it, it's definitely not complete, is breaking that cultural barrier. Again, women are in the small group settings particularly are able to open up and talk about, you know, going for a mammogram, going for a pap smear. Visibility, just being here at this conference, we also presented at the CalReach 2010 conference, which some of you may have been at, and letting people know about the organization and what we're doing. And then finally, creating a video. Nanette's Mammogram is a video that is tailored to culturally tailored for the Chamorro community. And it's sort of got a lot of humor in it, cultural nuances, and it talks about the importance of women going to get a mammogram, but sort of in the Chamorro way and some of the fears that they're experiencing and adding a little humor to that so that they can feel that it is okay to be afraid. It is okay to, you know, not feel weird about going into a strange room and being examined. Those kinds of fears that are very, very real among all of us for that matter. Increased interest, as I mentioned, there was a lot of interest in wanting information about other health topics. And I just wanted to show you this little flyer, very simplistic flyer. This is their workshop number 3, and it's going to be on heart disease and physical activity. And the reason why I brought this is when I came to San Diego to visit my mother before coming here, she had this posted on her refrigerator. And she's 72 years old, fortunately very healthy, but you know, out of all the resources that are available there that you see in the papers that are sent in the mail from Kaiser Permanente, Scripps Health, blah, 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 free mammogram, free this, free that, I never saw anything that she was interested in, but this was right on her refrigerator, which I can imagine, you know, is the case with other Chamorro women. So our challenge is we still have the cultural barriers that we have to address. Again, talking about the C word, cancer, whether it be breast cancer, prostate cancer, any of those, and people saying, oh no, I don't want to go to that workshop because that's not for me. I don't need to be there. large group meetings. Again, the small group settings have been very successful in sharing that information. Embarrassed to ask questions. Nobody wants to, you know, be noticed in the crowd. Oh, is it you that you're talking about? Even if you say, well, you know, I have a friend and, you know, who wants to know about this. And it's quite an intimidating situation. Other challenges, the meeting location. We currently hold a lot of our workshops at the Sons and Daughters of Guam Clubhouse. It's sort of central, but not very central because San Diego is such a large region. So we're trying to address that issue by doing the small group workshops. Limited personal transportation. A lot of the Chamorros, they take rides from each other. Some have cars, some don't. So it's quite an issue. And then getting the word out to the Chamorro community. How do we reach them? We're doing email blasts. Of course, we've got the flyers. We're trying to get out to the respective fiesta groups that have different segments of the population. But, you know, just being able to get that word out that we are having this workshop coming up next month, and please come. And it's truly word of mouth that seems to be effective. So we've got to really keep that going. Our next steps is building on those partnerships like we did with GCN and Komen and WinCard, all these people that have been so valuable to us in getting the program started. Obtaining our 501c3 status, I am very happy to announce that just as of last month, we got our official 501c3. So after months and months of paperwork, that's been done. Developing support groups for other relevant folks that are involved. It's not just the survivors. As we all know, the Chamorro community, as well as all the other Pacific Islanders, we're very family interdependent. And it's being able to embrace all of the interests of those members and not just the survivors and addressing those issues. When a family member has cancer, we all have cancer that are, you know, involved in that. Continuing our outreach efforts, getting that message out, even if we're repeating ourselves, you know, 17 times. If we've reached one person, I was talking to Lou, you know, we've succeeded. We've done our job. And these are the wonderful folks that have been a part of this. And, of course, our funding is very important. And these are the ladies that have been involved in the alliance. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Anne-Marie. And a big applause for everyone again that just presented. So we appreciate your time and your sharing your research with all of us here. And at this time, we have about 14 minutes for discussion and questions and comments. And so I'm just going to open that all up to you all. So if you have any questions, we could go with that. Yeah, talk stories. Yeah, we could talk stories. That's right. Okay, well, I have a question. Okay, this one's for Jane. I know you talked a little bit about the identity of the, you know, how ingrained all the identities of the youth, of the folks are in the youth. And I was just wondering, how does being American come in with the youth identity? Is that something that is part of their identity, or are they just basically ingrained in their cultural background? And how does that?
So we didn't actually see a lot of the American identity in their journals. But the ones who did mention it were the students of the single ethnicities. So like Japanese, Chinese, the ones who have the immigrant history into, you know, coming to Hawaii. They were told by their parents, you know, we moved to America because we wanted you to be an American. So those were the only students who kind of talked about the American identity. But for the rest of the students, usually of mixed identities or mixed ethnicities or of Hawaiian ethnicities,
okay. Thank
you. I was just going to add to that. I can tell you, at least experience in Guam, that as kids, you would tease people like, oh, you're American. And they'd be like, well, I'm not. I'm Chamorro or I'm whatever. Like, American was like white,
right.
Basically. It wasn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that is.
And actually, in Hawaii, we don't usually say Asian American or Pacific Island American or Tongan American. We just say Japanese or Chamorro or Samoan. So the American identity, it's like more of the local identity that's a lot stronger in Hawaii. So I was actually even surprised to see some of the students mention the American identity. But then again, those were the students who had parents who immigrated, so they probably, parents probably faced a lot of pressures to be American, mm-hmm. but the students really didn't.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought that was interesting because I know with my children, you know, they see themselves as Tongans, but they also see themselves as American because they don't speak the language. And so I was kind of interested in seeing how that played itself out. Yeah. So were the majority of the student immigrants, you were saying, right, yeah?
No, majority of the students were either mixed or Native Hawaiian. Mixed or and Native. Then there were just maybe about five.
But born in Hawaii?
Yeah, most of them mm-hmm. born in Hawaii.
Okay, great. Mona?
Yeah, Lance Armstrong also has a partnership with us in forming the Lance Armstrong Park from Marianas Islands, lives from.
Yeah. And just to tag on that, see Lucy, we call her Auntie Lucy. Mm-hmm. She was so proud when she saw her picture. She ordered like a whole box.
Yeah. She'll give you one if you want.
Yeah, and she was shipping them off to Guam.
Well, that's a way to get free shipping. Tana?
That's a good example of how the faces is what makes the brochure. Yeah. Not just the information, but, you know, in order for us to get them that information, we need that hook line, you know, to get them. And then something as simple as a face is now you have Auntie Lucy instead of a marketing organization providing that information to the community.
Right.
Mm. Kind of similar to your flyer
that
you did. Carol?
Well,
and that's a project that we do together with the University of Utah. Yeah. And I have another whole presentation that focuses on strengthening the family program, and it's longer. So, and this is only 15 minutes.
You do?
On our program, well, it takes this, and then also it also touches on our strengthening the family program. Yes. We used the regular BMI just because it's the one that we use with the Utah Health Department, and then in addition to that, we didn't really take we took their weight versus their But we did have another survey that we also took with. We worked along with one of our professors at the University of Utah, where we actually did go in and measure their waist and, you know, circumferences and things like that. Right, that's the one that we worked with Tim Bevins. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so we need to work on that a little bit.
They all did accelerometers and discovered that
for 7 weeks.
Not moving.
Yeah. Yes.
They've gotten up twice to go and cook dinner.
Exactly. That's our Tongan women for you. Yeah, because they wore it for a whole week. They wore it for a whole week, and then they turned it back in, and then they had to write down what they ate that whole week. And so their eating was like this, and the walking was like, yeah, or anything. So I think we just need to ship our people back so we can go back into the, you know, back into the bushes. And any other questions or comments or something, some insights or some flash that came to you that you could share? Tana?
Oh, actually, I just want to ask, I heard the different BMI scale. With it being 30, what is it for, what is the number for that other scale?
For Pacific Islanders? Uh-huh. I think they moved it up from 30. So, and then when they moved up from the standard scale of white Americans, it made it where Pacific Islanders were, you know, balanced, or, you know, some were still obese.
Yeah.
But the measurement is more reflective
of our body type.
Because even experiencing being in the military, I mean, I was like, every time I step on that scale, I was, boom, I was overweight, and they had to measure me. And
right.
And this is like the story for the majority of Pacific Islanders in the military. They always had to measure,
Above. Yeah, I mean, when I had my babies, even at 3 months, 4 months, they were always over here, and you're obese from age zero, you know, and so forth until they're grown. We're always on the other side of the scale. But one of the things that we did do in our survey is that we did have figures, you know, from small, medium, obese, and morbidly obese. And one of the things that we did find in asking the questions, you know, what would you see as being the healthy weight or the healthy person, that the Pacific Islanders do have it right. They understand what is healthy weight when they're looking at it and what is not. So
they don't rate it any higher.
So they don't, no, not visually. No, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, and great concerns. I know in the majority of our population the surveys was done in Salt Lake County, and there's various different places. But in the majority of Utah, in the areas that we're talking about, there are parks that are, lots of park where they can get out and walk. And even in some of the areas that are low income, there are parks that are there. And basically the majority of the folks there are our own people. So they don't, I would consider it safe. Of course, if it's like late at night, maybe not, but the majority of it's safe and it is accessible. Yeah, I think one of the great things, Rich is one of the things like that Carol mentioned, which is one of the programs that we do have to promote physical activity amongst families, because family's big amongst our community, correct? And so, but we don't play together, at least in the Tongan family. It's almost like disrespectful to play with your dad and play with your mom. But with the Strengthening the Family program, what we did is we brought the family together, and we had and this one just wore me out. We had mom protecting dad while the kids were trying to tickle dad. And, you know, and I was doing this, trying to protect her. By the end, I was sweating. So, and the kids are loving it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's laughing.
It really is.
The other thing that was really interesting was that when we said we always have some food, and we brought healthy food and all that, and that was not what was left. I mean, the minute those kids came upstairs and they saw tables full of apples and oranges and all that, they ran over and grabbed them. I was surprised.
Because if we had the choice, we'd probably bring, like, the dollar burgers. Okay. But the University of Utah took care of our right. But the kids were. Tana?
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of how if you let the communities create those interventions instead of us coming up with these interventions and trying to shove it down communities' throats, you know, we'll be kind and say, oh, yes, thank you, but when you go out the door, we just throw the material out. But I think, you know, something as simple as tickling, which is not your standard physical activity. But that also is a way of kind of getting around some of those taboos of, you know, playing with your mom or dad. But it's through that type of activity where you can.
I agree with the participants come up with their own games. They just think about something that would get everyone moving, and they would come with their own. They were so excited to share their own.
Yeah, and that's really an excellent, excellent program. And I would recommend that each of you, and actually Carol, Professor Gunfer is the creator of that program, Strengthening Family Program. So just go ahead and Google it. It's been tested. It's an evidence base all over. It's been tested in Hawaii, and it is tweakable. So that's what's really cool about it, is that you can tweak it so that it applies to your community, which is exactly what Tana was talking about. So we're going to have one, we were out of time, but we're going to give one last, the last comment to Tana to close us off with. You had your hand up, Tana.
Well, it was just a comment that I had in trying to promote physical activity in the Samoan community in San Francisco. It's been and almost like you want to scratch your hair out. Because it was like, well, you know, we, who in the, who goes and, you know, and walk in a park, you know, what is that? You know, who does that? You know, don't you have something better to do? So it has been that challenge. How do we get them to, you know, shift from, because I think their physical activity is more like they go to their plantation and they do the heavyweight kind of stuff. So that's like a big, huge challenge.
And we feel your pain because we're right there with you.
And I'm learning a lot from what you all are doing.
Or a day that's appropriate.
The kids want to come. The kids want so much time that you better
be here. I think I want to go tickle Jay.
Okay. Okay, one last comment here from Jane. Okay, go ahead, Jane, and then we'll call it.
I was just interested if anybody knows of any environmental changes, you know, like addressing the fact that there's so much fast food joints, and I know California has made policies that they're trying to reduce that and making sure that there's not so many. Like, you know what I mean? So environmental changes, so there's more community gardens or fresh food places, you know? So it's not only on the individual to make the decisions, but also changing it so sidewalks are safer.
Jay has
We did that presentation yesterday. We have a community action group, it's been on a community action group that addresses obesity outside the lines of health education and addressing surgery with policy changes, environmental change.
Thank you again. Thank you all for. Oh, go ahead. You want to?
No, I was just going to add that also working with your city councils, that they can change the zoning so they limit the amount of fast food type restaurants that are even in a particular zone. Yeah. And I know that, like the city of Loma Linda, that's what they've done. And there's very few, like, there's still enough around, but they do limit it.
Once again, thank you for attending and enjoy the rest of your PAW conference.